Good morning. Today I'm going to be talking about building assets, youth assets. And what I'm going to talk about a little bit is about youth data and also some of the efforts that our health department has done to promote youth development. I'd like to acknowledge one of my work colleagues that has been involved in, I'm sort of new to youth health that came and found me, but Sonia Jane's in the audience. Can you stand up, Sonia? Sonia has been involved in resiliency research for over 10 years. Also, all three of us, plus one more work colleague, Julie Garcia and Wendy Wright, worked on this report of youth health. I'll be presenting some data on it. So I have no financial or commercial interest to disclose. The learning objectives today was to identify some of the health issues among youth in Alameda County and in California, but I'd like a special focus with the health inequities. I'm looking at by race, ethnicity, by place, by income, age, and gender. We're trying, the health department, to sort of refocus our efforts and really look at building assets among youth to reduce risky behaviors. So I'll be talking about that a little bit later when we talk about what's happening at the health department. So this is a report that we released 2 years ago. It wasn't something, it was something that we just put together on our own time, and it just it received tremendous amount of interest from a wide array of people. So I'm going to be presenting some of the data highlights, and then start talking about, well, what do you do with this data? What can you do to make change? And then talk about the rewards and challenges of doing youth development work. So we all know in public health that, I mean, a lot of our focus is the medical model, and it's much easier to look at diseases, but that when you support youth, most of them do really well in life, and that they not only thrive with a little bit of support, but grow into healthy and thriving adults. So the other thing that's very obvious, but sometimes it's harder to implement, is that if you have interesting activities to youth, for youth, have something meaningful for them to participate in, they're less likely to engage in risky sexual behaviors, less likely to smoke, and that overall do better academically, health-wise, and a number of other areas. So part of this is about shifting the approach to not only look at deviants and deficits and look at the medical model, pardon me, but to move away from that and start looking at positive youth development, where we really focus on youth strengths and get them really engaged in what we're doing. I'll be showing this again, but I just wanted to mention that the resiliency or protective factors or assets have sort of three different external assets, and so the youth do a lot better when they have caring relationships, and they have adults that have high expectations of them, and have something interesting to participate that they find engaging. And these can happen all sorts of levels. That happens at home, it happens at school, in the community, and as was talked a lot about today, is among peers. Peers have a tremendous influence. So all these things work together to build on internal assets where the youth develop empathy, problem-solving ability, self-awareness, and all these things lead to health, social, and academic outcomes. I'll be talking quite a bit about academic outcomes. How many people here heard Sir Michael Marmot speak on the opening session? Oh, just a few. It was really outstanding. He was very eloquent, and one of the things that he talked about, and this is to show you the difference between the medical model and looking at social determinants of health, he said that in the U.S. every year 180 medical problems are averted by medical advances, but 1.4 million lives would be saved if we focused in eliminating health inequities in education. So 180,000 compared to 1.4 million. So this illustrates this. This is in Alameda County, and when you look at neighborhoods that have less than 70% of their population that graduated from high school, their life expectancy is 74. But when you look at neighborhoods where graduation rate is 90 to 100%. The life expectancy is 81. So that's about a little bit more than seven years difference in life expectancy. Here's a slide that looks at essentially poverty and school performance. And on the left is school performance. And what it shows, and then on the x-axis is the percent enrolled in free and reduced lunches, so higher poverty schools. And there's a direct inverse proportion between enrollment and school performance. So essentially, schools where there's very little poverty do have academic achievements more than 50% than those in the highest poverty schools. So one of the things that will be interesting as we get more into this research is to look at, because there are a few exceptions. If you look at the 100% on the right side and you look up, there are some schools that are performing quite well despite being in high poverty areas. And part of resiliency research is to start look at, well, what are they doing that's right? And how can we build on those things? Here I'm kind of trying to thread together race and place and income. And these things aren't randomly distributed. And our African Americans and Latino students, this is the percentage of that population that goes to high poverty schools. So almost half, 43% of our African Americans are in these high poverty schools. And it's not just that it's in a high poverty neighborhood, it's that those schools have fewer resources as well. They have teachers that are less credentialed, they have schools that are in disrepair, they're less likely to have a curriculum that has college readiness. I mean, there is a whole host of things, of implications of being in these schools, and it's the African Americans, Latinos, Pacific Islanders that are the most likely to be in those schools. And when you look, I mean, talking about health inequities, 4% of white students are in those schools. So are we really giving people a fair chance in life when already in high school they're at completely different schools, completely different performing schools? Just here, just a quick map of Alameda County. I'm just going to be showing a map of life expectancy. So this is life expectancy by school district. The red areas are West and East Oakland, where the life expectancy in those school districts, like of the whole population, is less than 75. And then that's less than 74% age category. Then green areas, it's more affluent neighborhoods and affluent school districts where the life expectancy of the population is over 80. But individual differences can be much higher. Later, I'll be just briefly touching on a couple of programs that are in West Oakland and East Oakland, in those two red areas. So we all know that school dropout rate is underestimated. But it's really frightening when we look at Alameda County and we compare all our school districts. Oakland Unified has a four-year high school dropout rate of 36%. And a quarter of our students go to those schools. So in our largest school district, there's a 36% school dropout rate. And among African Americans and Latinos, it's over 50%. So we know those things have kind of lifelong consequences. So now I'm moving away from education, just talking about some general health issues in the population. So the educational attainment doesn't happen in a vacuum. So what do our communities look like? Well, in almost every other place for youth, car crashes or unintentional, that make up the vast majority of unintentional injuries, are the number one cause of death. In Alameda County, it's homicide. Can we imagine what those communities look like? The number one killer for all youth is homicide. So I'm going to move a little more quickly here. So the leading cause of death is homicide. It's 20 times higher among African American youth. The profile for gang violence is twice as high among males, and there's a huge number of juvenile arrests, the vast majority among males as well. This is a slide that shows some of the environment in the school. You know, you need a safe school to be able to learn. the number that have been harassed in the past month, been in a physical fight, belonged to a gang, and felt unsafe at school. Mental health is one of the most important health issues. It's the first cause of hospitalization among youth, if you exclude childbirth. Just a huge number of, a third of 11th graders experienced substantial depression in the past year, and 20% of youth ages 9 to 13 have been diagnosed with a mental health disorder. With mental health, with all sort of, I'm trying to show this sort of a constellation of traits of health issues, health and social issues that travel together. This is substance use in the past month. And that, I'll move on. Sexual health, this is self-reported, so at least a quarter of our youth ages 15 to 17 are sexually active in the Bay Area, and almost half did not use a condom at the last time they had sex. Also have very high rates of STIs. Here's asthma hospitalization rates. For youth ages 12 to 17, 24% have been diagnosed with having asthma. And this asthma hospitalization rate shows how it's not well controlled. Again, the darker areas show rates of higher asthma hospitalization. The darkest areas are West and East Oakland. These are areas that whatever indicator I show, if I show poverty, if I show dropout, if I show asthma, they come up again and again. Here's just a point that older youth are less likely to have health care insurance. Now I'm going to talk briefly about protective factors, the three areas that I mentioned. Here's this framework again. We know that when we build on youth assets, they have fewer risky behaviors and have better health outcomes. We can look at many different levels. The school levels tend to have the lowest protective factors. Neighborhood levels, it depends on the indicator. There are vast differences between populations. For role models, 41% of African Americans report that they have an adult that they look up to versus 70% of whites. Again, I'm highlighting schools as a good place to build assets. Only a third of the students have a high level of assets at school as compared to 73 in grade 7 and 61 in grade 11. Something that we see with a lot of the indicators is that the protective factors go down by grade level. This is data from the California Healthy Kids Survey that was done for 7th grade, 9th grade, and 11th graders. And a lot of the indicators, when you look at them one by one, you see that youth are getting less and less engaged in school as time goes on. Particularly here, meaningful participation drops from 73% that feel that they're involved in activities that interest them, that they can make a contribution to. And by the 11th grade, it's 31%. So this report, quite unexpected to me, received a tremendous coverage. Front page coverage in the newspaper, and we got a lot of requests just from people reading the newspaper asking us to come to a high school, asking us to come to various talks. And what I found interesting about it was often not for places that had specifically a program on youth. So presented to asthma group, a diabetes group. So here are four examples of what the health department, and really we're just only the four examples of things that are going on. I'll have time to talk about two. One is a mentorship of a West Oakland High School called Ralph Bunch. It's a charter school. It's a school where the students have a lot of what's considered problem behaviors, and the health department adopted the school and has paid internships. And another is a community-based initiative with support from the health department, from the Oakland and County initiative. So let me talk a little bit about Ralph Bunch. We're able to take up to 20 students. They're in the 12th grade. They're 14 to 16 years old. And we're able to give them a paid internship of $7.50 an hour. They do 8 to 20 hours a week. And there's a coordinator on site at the at the school. So they do, they match the placements, they interview them, ask them what their career goals are, and what types of projects that, we have various projects that they can work on. They try to best match them best they can. I'm going to skip this because I really want to have time to talk about the challenges and rewards, but essentially it's a partnership between these four different organizations that identified that they really needed to, a high priority was to have more positive activities for youth. Oh, I wanted to encourage you to go see, there's a poster presentation of Oakland Youth Movement at 12:30, and the it's 3145 is the 3145 is the number. It's just fantastic. It's all led by youth, and they're doing research for youth by youth and doing the analysis themselves. I'd strongly encourage you to go speak to them. So, in talking at the health department, I've asked the people that are working on these various projects what the rewards and difficulties are trying to do youth development. And people have said to me that they really find that youth have energy, wisdom, and creativity, that it's very meaningful work. They have youth have a great contribution to make and that we need to celebrate and embrace. It keeps the youth off the street. It gives voice to youth. And that it has results, that the Ralph Bunche kids have had increased attendance, better school performance, and that the staff has really seen a lot of personal transformation of students that were barely engaged and now are real leaders. Some of the challenges is that it takes a lot of time. You know, the change, these students are living in different circumstances and have a lot of need to be helped with their life skills, need a lot of individual attention. Though that it's worthwhile, it takes time, and that some of these approaches are very individualized, that it's been extremely difficult to recruit boys. And as you saw, some of the health indicators that boys are engaged in a lot of risky behaviors. And that in the health department, there's no real infrastructure for youth. You know, we have a maternal and child health section. We call it maternal, paternal, child, and adolescent health, but there's no real home for youth health. And that for the staff is that they haven't been, although they're learning and doing a great job, they haven't been taught how to do this. Thank you.